Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed, quite frankly, to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, I have some pretty auspicious news.
Oh, really?
And I think it will be the subject of some debate, but you tell me what you think.
Okay. You can count on my honesty.
As of, I think, today, the day we are recording this, we have crossed mission log in number of iTunes reviews. We have 301 and they have 295.
That's one of the many metrics that we use to measure ourselves against that podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
Another is dick size.
How many negative reviews do they have versus our negative reviews?
That's an interesting question. Let me see if I can pull it up. We did get a new negative review from somebody who really took issue with the fact that we aren't super experts. Hey, look at that. We're at 302. I checked this 5 minutes before we got on the Skype, and we're already at 302. That's great. Thank you, everybody, for leaving nice reviews. Let's see. Let's see if it breaks it out here. So we have 11 four-star reviews, 2 2-star reviews, and 1 1-star review.
1 star. Not even 2 stars. 1 star, really?
Yeah, we got a new 1 star.
I don't feel like a show that's as produced as well as ours is could get a 1 star review.
Well, the guy took issue with our being not dry, uninteresting experts.
Oh, he took umbrage with the fact that we aren't a scholastic enterprise?
Okay, get ready to gloat at him.
Okay.
Mission Log has 14 four-star reviews, 6 3-star reviews, 4 2-star reviews, and 8 1-star reviews.
Oof. See, I feel a little better about our negative reviews now. That's pretty good. Look, they say if you haven't made enemies here or there, you haven't truly lived your life. And I think that in the life of a podcast, a couple of 1-star reviews don't mean too much. What do you think?
I agree with you in principle, but I do want our listeners to feel motivated to go bury that 1-star review in more 5-star reviews, which they seem to be doing, which is great.
Yeah, it goes without saying that we want to drown and then bury the bad reviews on our site.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I'm feeling great, and I kind of want to celebrate by ripping open another pack of Star Trek cards. What do you think?
Oh, geez, this is like 2 opens for the price of 1. Let's do it. Hey, do you want to do it at the same time?
Oh, cross streams?
Yeah, what do you think?
Won't that, collapse the space-time, what have you?
I don't know.
I can't remember how Egon talks about that, but
maybe.
All right, get your pack.
All right.
The game is 5-card stud. The game is exceedingly simple. Part of this is just the card data.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
If one of us gets a signature card and the other doesn't, it's going to just be total showstopper. Got one for reunion, which is a bunch of hands in each other. I think this is the time that Worf's baby mama drops off his son.
My first card, my top card, is Hollow Pursuits. It's a Barkley episode. It's got a bunch of fencing swords crossed on the front.
Crossing streams, crossing swords. It's all thematic.
It's card number 69. Nice.
Right on. Let's see. My next one is the Vengeance Factor. It's a Riker cupping the head of a young woman. Don't remember this episode.
I got the Naked Now, which is an episode we remember and treasure.
Yeah. Does it have an image of Assistant Chief Engineer Shimoda on it?
It is a massively missed opportunity to have a Shimoda card. I don't know if a Shimoda card exists, but what we have is just a picture of Data and what is supposed to be a nude Tasha Yar, who's just sort of in black profile.
Yeah.
Sort of shadowed out. So
that's the second image you would want for that episode. Sure. After Isolinear Jenga.
Sure.
Next card for me is an episode called Hollow Pursuits, and it's some fencing swords crossed. Is that sinking in for you, Adam?
Yeah, that's the top card that I got. We got a repeat.
Yeah. But what are the chances?
Hey, Ben. What are the chances that my third card is an autographed card? Because
are
it
you
is.
Shitting?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's
wow, you have opened two packs and you've gotten two autograph cards.
I know, right?
That's crazy.
Congratulations, this limited edition card has been personally signed by Charles Dennis.
The Charles Dennis?
I know, right? I fucking got Charles Dennis as Commander Sunad in Transfigurations. This is a gentleman who looks to be wearing some melted candle wax on his head, on his forehead. That is running into his ears. So.
Oh, nice. Well, I look forward to hearing him talk about the process of putting on that makeup at Greatest Gen Con
2017.
Man, I've got a very Worf-heavy pack here because my last two are Sins of the Father, which is an image of Worf, and Firstborn, which is an image of a Batleth.
Well, Worf's your guy, isn't he?
He's one of my guys.
You wouldn't say he's your favorite guy?
No, Picard's my favorite guy.
I guess. All right. My last two
Who's your guy?
I don't know. I think maybe Guinan's my guy at this point. Just going off of what we've seen in the series, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, Guinan's pretty good.
I got Remember Me, and I got Gambit Part 2 as my last two cards.
Don't remember them? What's Gambit Part 2? So it's the exciting conclusion to one of the early multi-episode arcs
that
the Star Trek universe attempted.
It is card 157, so it is very far into our podcast's future.
Are the numbers of the cards corresponding to episode numbers?
I'm only guessing because the Naked Now is card number 3, and that all of these other cards are episodes we haven't seen, and they're very high numbers, that would be the case. But that would just be a guess.
Okay.
So what we got on today's episode is Season 2, Episode 16, Q-Who.
Did you just crack a brew?
I did.
I've been doing something a little classier and drinking some brown liquor with a big chunk of ice in it. But you know, you do you. Speaking of beverages, this episode opens with a hot engineer ordering a hot chocolate out of the replicator and spilling it all over the captain. And she does like what you would do if you wanted to get your hands all over somebody and not actually wipe their shirt off. Just she doesn't like go for a rag, which I imagine they've got to have like chamois rags around the engine compartment of this ship, but she's just kind of like patting his chest.
She's sort of giving him a sponge bath with her hands.
It's pretty aggressive move. I feel like going the other way, this would be grounds for some kind of tribunal, you know.
So this is Anton Gomez that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of things that are weird about this scene. First of all, like, I think we've both been in like white collar business environments that have signs up that say like no food or drink past this point.
Right.
No coffee without a lid, for example. Mm-hmm. And yet engineering has a full-on replicator just in that department. I think that's a strange choice to put a replicator there. I mean, do you want you want guys eating fried chicken and doing warp core repair? I don't know. It just seems like a bad deal.
It's one of the nice things about having one of those induction burner type stoves that they have all the computers modeled after in engineering is you just squeegee them off once you're
everything
done,
really, you know? Wipes clean, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good call.
You got to imagine that's some pretty like advanced nonstick material.
Yeah. Yeah. So this scene, like they begin with the B story, which is
how much fucking Windex must they have used on this show? Like there must have been a PA on set whose whole job was just to run in and like squeegee everything off after every shot.
This is the late 80s. I mean, this is pre-microfiber cloth. So
yeah.
I mean, whoever that PA was probably putting in real elbow grease.
With, like, terry cloth or, like, a t-shirt or something.
And you can't get anything clean with those. They're too linty.
It's the worst.
Can't do it.
Well, anyways, Picard's all verklempt about his messed up shirt, so he's going to go put a new one on.
Picard's wet again.
He steps into the elevator, and it's not the elevator, but the back of a Toyota Previa.
Yeah, he does that thing where he walks out of the transporter without looking. And that sounds like a pretty dangerous maneuver for a ship that has been known to wing a guy around inside a transporter a time or two. So he steps onto the Previa, the door closes behind him, and he is out in deep space.
Yeah.
On a Previa with Q.
Q is in his like captain uniform, and he's citing the use of the Previa as a loophole in his prior agreement with Picard not to fuck with the Enterprise anymore. I guess he lost the bet in the last terrible episode he appeared in, and the terms were that he would leave him alone for the rest of eternity. But
yeah, he totally jakes a shuttle for that purpose.
yeah, but he's interpreting the confines of that agreement to be limited to the ship, and so he's telling Picard about how he wants to become a member of the crew, and Picard is like, I'm not listening to your bullshit.
Yeah, just pretty much shuts him down, is not really interested in even hearing what Q has to say.
It's like a dad who has like, you know, missed his kid's baseball game one too many times and is like trying to smooth it over by going like, do you want to go like for ice cream? And the kid's like, no, you know?
And Q is just like chewing the walls off of the scenery here. Like he is so entertaining and fun. Like he's getting in Picard's face. He's whispering in his ear. He's like throwing a rubber ball against one of the bulkheads. He's great.
Yeah, he's totally like Steve McQueening in the back of the Previa.
Right.
With that rubber ball.
And like, again, I think we've mentioned this before in other Q episodes. The dialogue is not super strong, but it's Delancey that puts it up over the top.
Yeah.
It's his force of will that makes it work.
Yeah, he does not merely deliver dialogue. He delivers dialogue.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So we cut back to the ship, and Guinan's spider senses are tingling.
Oh, man, I totally was thinking of them as Spidey senses.
Yeah.
We're on the same wavelength.
She feels a special tingle and radios up to the bridge. And this is a pretty weird thing to happen. Riker can't ever remember Guinan calling the bridge before, and he says as much. He's like, what's going on, Guinan? And Guinan's like, oh, just checking to see if everything's cool. And she says it in that way that, like, whenever a girl says that we need to talk, you know, like, some serious shit has gone down, but she's not willing to say it.
Right.
I think anytime Guinan says that like, something just feels off, or I just thought I'd reach out and say hi, I feel like anytime Guinan does that, that is a reason to shit some pants.
That is grounds for calling a full stop on the ship and reassessing everything, frankly.
Yeah, except Riker doesn't have a special relationship with Guinan, so he just sort of writes it off as Guinan being weird Guinan.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, cool, Guinan. Everything's all right up here. Thanks.
Yeah, and that's like tabled, essentially, and they kind of keep going about the business of the ship, and then
Troy's spidey sense starts to tingle, and she's like, I don't feel Captain Picard anymore. Like, maybe we should see where that guy is.
That's got to be, like, real upsetting, right? When the, like, gravitational center of your social universe is suddenly gone.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of wonder what took her so long for that to happen. I wonder if she's, like, constantly doing an audit of all the people in her mind, and like, on that long loop, she gets back to the top, back to Picard, and that's when she's sort of tipped off. And they do one of those checks with the computer. They ask the computer where Captain Picard is, and the computer's like, yeah, he's not here.
Computer, locate Captain Picard.
The captain is not on the ship.
I like how neutral the computer treats every piece of information.
Yeah, no matter how terrifying, like, the captain of the ship is no longer on the ship. And by the way, I didn't tell you the moment that happened.
Right. You would think that there would be, like, a life alert bracelet that just kind of, like, pings whenever he is suddenly not accounted for.
Yeah, the computer's like, Picard's not here and one of the shuttles are gone. And Wesley, to his credit, is like, well, that's impossible. We would have known if someone flew a shuttle out of here. Yeah. So they start trying to piece together what the hell is going on, and we cut back to the shuttle.
And I think this is where Q sort of, like, grinds Picard down to the point where Picard agrees to hear him out back on the Enterprise.
Q's like, I can wait you out forever, man. Like, we can be buddies in the shuttle for years or decades. It doesn't matter because I can live forever.
And Picard's, I can keep you alive forever, too. Like,
yeah. And Picard's like, you know, given that piece of information, he's like, well, I don't necessarily want to die out here on this Toyota Previa. Like, if I promise to, like, give you a hearing, like, listen to what you're offering, like, can we just go back to the ship? And they're like, yeah. So he snaps his fingers and they're back in 10 forward.
This is an awesome scene because this is where Q and Guinan have a little showdown. They come close to a showdown. You know, Picard...
It's a karate stance showdown.
Yeah, like Guinan, like, puts her hands up and she's got her fingers kind of arranged in a way where you think she's going to start shooting Emperor Palpatine death ray type of shit. And Q is, like, telling Picard that he has no idea how dangerous it is to have somebody like Guinan on his ship. And every episode with Guinan now is implying more and more what a surpassingly powerful and eldritch creature she truly is. If Q is like, you know, if Q's tail puffs up when he sees Guinan, like, you know, some shit is about to go down if she actually decides to do something.
Yeah, it's great exposition because it's allowing us to infer something that they never prove, right? Like, by Q's mere reaction to Guinan, we suddenly, like, are supposed to propel her up into the level of her being sort of an equal, if not a superior, to Q, which, like, is sort of a crazy implication.
Yeah, well,
she's been hiding in plain sight, basically.
And it raises a lot of questions, especially because what Q now does is propel the ship out thousands of light years from where they were into the path of a Borg cube.
Yeah, but why does he do that? Like,
well,
like there's a moment that instigates that.
Sounds like you have something you want to say about that, Adam.
This might be the beer talking, but I want to make sure I get this right, man. So they're in 10 forward, and the thing that Q wants more than anything is to be a crew member on the ship. And Picard's like, fuck that. Like, you're a really interesting dude, but you're far too much trouble to have as a crew member. Like, what are you going to be? You're going to be like an ensign or some random science officer or whatever? Like you're skipping the academy and you're going to be a part of the crew? No way. Like, that's...
What, are you going to scrub the Bussard collectors?
Yeah, you can't jump the line like
that.
Give me
a fucking break.
And Q's like, look, man, you're going to need someone like me out here. You're going to run into some times when you're going to need some help. And I'm just the type of person that can help you in moments like those. And Picard's like, we're ready for what's out here. Our whole mission is about exploring things and running into challenges and overcoming them. Like, that's why we're here. We're going to be fine. Not concerned. And Q's like, you have no idea. Like, that is the most hubristic shit I've ever heard. Like, I know everyone and everything in the universe, and you're not ready. I'm telling you, you're not. And Picard's like, yeah, we'll see. I think we're going to be all right. So Q snaps his fingers, and then that sort of frisbee golfs the Enterprise across the galaxy. And as soon as they land on the other side of the galaxy, Q's like, all right, bye.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
They start scanning around, and they're like picking up the same thing that they were picking up in the neutral zone at the end of the last season, when they would like find a planet where an entire settlement had been scooped up and vanished.
Yeah.
And they, I think they mention this, that they like have observed this before, but they really like don't make a strong effort to link it back to those episodes. Pretty quickly they're picking up this ship, and Guinan is like, all right, here's what you're dealing with.
Guinan is from this part of the galaxy, and that's the only reason they're asking her advice on anything at all. Like, it would be pretty strange if they were at any planet and they're like, hey, Guinan, what do you think? What do you think of this? Like, Guinan's like, yeah, we're actually pretty close to where my people are from, so I could probably give you some advice on what's going down. And so they choose to do that. And it isn't long before they pick up a ship that's headed their way.
It's the Borgs.
It's the Borgs.
He's a Borg. Oh, no.
And we get a pretty neat scene here, because they call down to Guinan and they're like, hey, are these the people that murdered everyone on your planet? And Guinan goes to her office.
Yeah, just like across the hall from 10 forward.
What does she do there?
I don't know.
Like, is she counting money? It's just bolts of scarves?
Yeah, bolts of scarves. She might have like the like really rare bottles of Romulan ale stashed back there.
Oh, that's the private stock.
Mainly, though, let's be honest, this room has Masturbatorium written all over it.
God, you know that Riker wants the code for that door. It's close to 10 forward. They can just fall out of the door and into that hall and then across the way into the office. That's all he needs.
But Guinan's not giving that shit up. That's where she goes to flick the old bean.
In her karate stance?
Yeah.
Some karate stance bean flicking?
Yeah.
So she pulls the image of the ship up on her screen in the office, and she's like, yep, those are them. You better get the fuck out of here, because they will light you up.
And this like begins Guinan warning them to just, like, you know, they're like 2.5 years away from the closest star base if they were to push the ship to the limit and just like turn heel and run. And she's basically saying, like, that is the thing you should do right fucking now, because like, this is not a fight you want to even risk having.
That's like a core tension, though, on this show, for this ship, for this captain. Like, it's the tension between that explorational tendency and the idea that it would be the right thing to do to leave. If you trust Guinan at all, if the only reason Guinan is on the ship is to provide the sort of advice that you can't get anywhere else, like, it would be smart to take her advice, but they don't.
And so they raise their shields, they're taking seriously that this is like a massive ship that has, you know, like it's weird in a bunch of ways. Like there's no bridge, there's no engineering section. They're not detecting any weapons or life signs, but they know that it's like because they don't understand what they're looking at. So the shields go up, they like radio down to engineering, and like in soft focus in the background of this shot, one of the Borgs appears in the engineering section and just starts like walking around. And Geordi's like,
"Security, report to main engineering. We have an intruder."
"We just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic."
And so Picard actually like comes down with the Dustbuster Club to check out this this visitor that they have, and this Borg is like hanging around in the Shimoda Memorial Corner, like just kind of looking at all the screens, taking notes in a spiral steno pad, and learning as much as it can about the ship that it has beamed itself on, despite the fact that the shields are up. And this is where Q reappears, and he starts kind of like taunting Picard, who's like,
"Interesting, isn't it? Not a he, not a she, not like anything you've ever seen. An enhanced humanoid."
Yeah, he goes down the laundry list of how what an oddity it is. And as he's describing the Borg starts flicking its little arm against the instruments in engineering, shooting some green lightning at it.
Yeah.
And stuff's starting to happen. And Picard's like, "Hey, bro, cut it out." Like he does that thing where he raises both hands. He's like, "Hey, man, we're not going to hurt you. We're just out here on a groovy exploratory mission." And the Borg is like, not even listening. Like Picard is just beneath him to even listen to at this point.
Yeah. So Worf tries to stun this guy and doesn't work. And so he cranks the Dustbuster up to full suck.
"Commence Operation Vacuum Suck."
And kills the Borg.
Suck, suck, suck.
No sooner has this Borg gone down than his Borg buddy beams onto the ship and like finishes lightning bolting the computer, and then he starts like digging around in the corpse for components and like grabs like three or four things, and you know, in the like try to phaser this guy a couple times, and he's got like personal shielding that has adapted to counteract the effects of a Dustbuster phaser.
That's a great scene too, because when that little personal shield goes up, he kind of looks at Worf, and like if a look could possibly give a jerk off hand motion, like that's what he gives to Worf at that moment. It's an oddly emotional showing. Yeah. from something that is utterly without emotion. Like it was a total big dog move.
If drones were given to talking, this drone would have said, "Cool Dustbuster, bro."
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so he strips the other guy who's dead of all of his useful parts, and then they both beam away.
So they get back up to the bridge, and the Borg have opened a hailing frequency, and it's just kind of like a random shot of something inside the Borg cube that they're seeing, and they're getting like a bunch of voices at once saying to surrender and that they're going to be assimilated, and Picard is really embracing the hubris that Q accused him of, and just goes like, "Nah, dog, fuck all that." And so they put him in a cutting beam, which starts, this is like a pretty sweet special effect actually, where they like the Borg cut a cone section out of the saucer section and start like pulling it out of the ship, and you see like individual decks with like a toilet in one of them and like a, you know, like a school classroom in one of them.
If
and like
the saucer had a mole, the Borg were like removing the mole by like scalpeling around it and then pulling the skin from it.
Yeah, or like doing like a Biore strip on the black head of the saucer section.
Right.
And I guess that's 18 people by the farm in that little...
If there is a toilet in that cross-section of the saucer, that's a real Jurassic Park-style moment, isn't it? Like lawyer on the toilet, T-Rex pulls the top of the porta-potty off. Like, it's a total Jurassic Park ripoff, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it came 7 years before Jurassic Park, but you're right.
Sure.
So the Enterprise tries like shooting back, and this is like the only time I can think of where shooting a phaser at a Borg ship has any kind of satisfying result in the series, because they blow some like sizable holes in the Borg cube, which is fun to watch, you know. The cube is not appearing to be a threat anymore, so they decide to send an away team over. And this is our first time on board a Borg's cube.
This is an idea that Guinan objects to heartily, by the way.
Yeah.
They sort of focus group it in the conference room, and Guinan's like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Like, you cannot just walk over there. Yeah. Especially when they know that the phasers that they used in engineering didn't have any effect. Like, they beam a dustbuster club over there with nothing, like with slingshots for all they know. Like
with the same weapons that didn't work a minute ago.
Yeah. They're better off giving Worf a Batleth,
which they should have. I mean, I guess they wanted to save that for Star Trek First Contact, but
sure,
it would have been cool.
This is one of the cool interior set pieces that we've gotten so far. This interior of the ship is really awesome.
Yeah, it's like if H.R. Giger had gone to work for like Black & Decker and designed a microwave, like this is sort of what it would have looked like, I feel like.
Yeah, a lot of dryer ducting.
A lot of alien xenomorph was here type goo on the walls, but it's not quite as gooey.
Yeah. They do a great job with scale too. Like they go tight and wide in this scene.
They show you how crazy big this ship is, and that's something that is like very rarely achieved with good effect in this show. I mean, when Riker goes and visits his beloved Anybody Canyon, it never looks like quite right. But
yeah,
this looks awesome.
Yeah, and you could tell that Riker wanted to yell anybody off of that balcony, because like a moment before they go to commercial, the camera pulls out real wide to show a super wide shot, and he walks over to the edge, and I was like, oh, if there's ever a time to yell anybody again, it's right now.
Yeah.
Did you notice when they went super wide that there was a pool at the bottom?
No.
I never noticed that the first time I saw this episode, but yeah, there's like a green brown, almost like not a river, but like a big long pool at the bottom.
Whoa. You think that's where the Borg Queen swims laps?
Yeah, I think so. You got to keep it tight.
Yeah. So they learn a lot of things about the Borgs. They learn that they have baby Borgs with baby Borgs implants. When their ship is damaged, all the Borgs go back to their cubby holes and use their collective brain power to regenerate the ship. And what else do we learn about the Borgs?
Data, like, so there's these alcoves where all of the Borg, like, they walk in to these little closet spaces standing up, and then they plug themselves in to the ship, and ostensibly that's where they get information. They work as a collective, and they also like repair themselves. And so Data walks into one of these closets and tries to like stick a finger in the outlet. Nothing happens, but it's another case of like Data sticking his arm through uh, through a transporting wall, like,
yeah,
just sort of not really thinking about the consequences. Pretty great.
Wouldn't it have been fun if they had just, like, made a little bit of a motif of Data, like, getting terribly maimed every few episodes? You know, because they could, like they can repair a Data arm or a Data leg just fine. It's like his brain is very precious, but, like, he can spare a hand for a few weeks.
I wish they had done that. That would have been so great.
That would have been fun.
It would have been like the body part equivalent of killing Kenny in South Park, like, just another forearm.
Yeah. Well, a lot of our listeners have been kind enough to tweet at Star Trek Room and, you know, make their case for us getting jobs as writers on the new Star Trek series. And I feel like it's ideas like this that are really going to, like, take us over the top and convince the producers of that show that we are the kind of guys that have great ideas like this that they need on their staff.
Yeah, that's an idea that should go up on the whiteboard.
Mm-hmm. Let's put that in a box for season two.
Yeah. Let's see if it plays.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurseth the disease. Tell me more. You'll have to go again.
They beam back because they realize that the reason that no one cares that they're there is because every single one of these Borg is putting their effort into repairing the ship. And that really scares the shit out of Picard. Once he realizes that they're fixing the ship, he's like,
yeah,
bring them back. We got to get the fuck out of here.
And so they bug out, and then and the Borg's cube is, like, in hot pursuit. And there's a great shot where they, like, zoom in super tight on it, and it's like going, like, blah, 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 and, like, putting itself back together in real time. It looks really cool. This is maybe, like, the best special effect in an episode of really terrific special effects.
Yeah, it looks like a different show. It's so good.
And so Q is, like, going to take this as a great opportunity to come back and continue to make his case for getting a job on the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah.
I wish we had the kind of power over the new Star Trek series that Q has over Picard in this moment.
I want to get it legit, though.
Yeah. You don't want to use your supernatural powers to get a job?
I mean, I want to use my kung fu stance and my legit writing wit to get into that room, and nothing more.
Yeah. We should probably start writing if we
want. We're writing with our words on this show.
That's true.
So they're hightailing it out of there, and it becomes pretty clear that they can't outrun them. Their weapons aren't working anymore, and Q is like, I've got solutions to all these problems. It's too bad I'm not a crew member. I could really be useful right now.
Right. I mean, this is like the pitch he always makes, right? Like when he gave Riker the Q powers, it's like just have these cool powers, and you can just still be the second banana on this ship. And just, like, doesn't make any sense, you know? Doesn't add up.
Yeah, and the Borg cube's gaining on them. They finally get to a point where it becomes clear that this is a no-win situation. Like, the ship is going to pace them. Picard's like, look, buddy, if the decision is between asking for your help and dying on this hill, you know, like, for pride, I'm going to ask for help. Like, please help us. Don't really feel like dying today. Like, can you help us? Can you get us out of here? Like, if we're dead, you're going to be real sad, right? Who are you going to tease and torment if we're not around?
Yeah, and I mean, like, I think that the point Picard is making here is, like, yes, Q, like, this is a thing that we might encounter out here that would be hard for us to grapple with if we had encountered them without your, you know, throwing us into this gladiatorial arena with them in a totally synthetic situation. But, like that makes this your fault, not ours. Like, yes, we need your help in this completely artificial situation.
And, I mean, Q is right, and he has always been right, I feel like, in everything he said. Like, from the beginning, from the very first episode, from the very first moment he came on the scene, he's like, you guys aren't ready for this. You think you're ready. Humans are sloppy and violent and bad. You're going to fuck this up. And here it is. Like, I'm showing you how badly you are going to fuck this up.
But what he's wrong about is that he constantly comes at it from a point of view that Picard is too timid to, like, face those challenges. And Picard has never been timid. Picard is not hubristic or prideful or afraid. Like, he's a total realist. And Q,
in 10
like,
forward, he told Q that they were ready for anything.
Well,
like, how is that not hubristic?
They're ready for anything that they would naturally encounter, though.
You could argue that they were going to naturally encounter this sooner rather than later.
Yeah, within some amount of time. But this is, you know, like Guinan says, like, you put this in their path way earlier than it was supposed to happen. Like, as though she's sort of like tapped into some sort of understanding of the destiny or fate of the ship, which, like, that's a whole rabbit hole we could go down, but
yeah,
I choose not to.
So Q snaps his fingers, wings the Enterprise back to where it was before. The lesson being that they weren't ready for this. They got punched in the face, and Q's like, you know, think about this. Don't just wag your dick around the galaxy here thinking that you can push everyone else around, because it's impossible. You can't do it.
The Borgs have got to be just completely baffled, because they're like, all right, we got like a ship here that's like some interesting technology that we can assimilate, and we've overpowered them. Like, we've clearly demonstrated our superiority. Now we're going to start assimilating. Wait, where did they go? And then the Borgs have got to like be spending a year in conferences just going like, okay, like, what was this mode of transportation that the Enterprise had? Because we got to get us some of that. Where did those guys come from?
Should we try spinning around? I mean, I'm just spitballing here. Three of six, I told you, we're not going to start spinning around. It's not going up on the board. I was told there would be snacks at this meeting.
Borgs don't eat snacks. Shut up.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation where you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that. Being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform. Or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves. to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Our epilogue, what's the word for the thing at the end? That's the epilogue, right?
Yeah.
So our button on this episode is... just realized how much of an asshole I sounded like saying that word. So the button on the episode is Picard and Guinan enjoying a little bit of three-dimensional chess in 10 forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's nice after a long mission to play a little three-dimensional chess.
Yeah, hang out with your homegirl Guinan.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're chatting a little bit about the episode that came before.
Mm-hmm.
So Picard's like, yeah, that was pretty fucked up, huh? And Guinan's like, yeah, except you were not supposed to meet them for a while. And I can't tell you how I know that, but like now that they know you're here, I'm pretty sure that they're going to start stalking you big time.
Yeah.
And this sort of like sends a cold chill up Picard's spine because... they don't really have a solution to this problem.
Yeah.
And that is how the episode ends. It's a real kind of a down note.
Yeah. It just ends with Macho Man Randy Savage looking into the camera going, I'm coming to get you.
The cream of the crop. I love this episode. It was great beginning to end. That was awesome.
Pretty solid episode.
It, unsurprisingly, was a Rob Bowman episode. You gotta throw him the keys to the important ones, and they do.
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus aboard. You are Borg.
I thought a little bit about just how important this episode was, just in the overall canon of the Star Trek story, and... God, like, do you think they knew at this moment just how important this episode would be for everything that was to come after?
I get the sense that they did, because they, like, really did not fail in any of the, like, things that would have been tempting to fail at in designing this existential threat to the Federation. Like, the Borgs are really cool design, like the characters are really like fully realized. Like they definitely make like minor refinements to the design of the of those characters over the years, but like basically like they come fully formed. The ship that they fly around on comes fully formed. The like all of, like you know, if you like talk about like the mechanics of a monster, like Dracula, like it can't be out in daylight, and if you want to kill it, you have to use garlic, silver, or a stake to the heart. Like, you know, like all of the kind of rules of the Borg are like totally set up in this episode. Like, you know what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, how they work, like how the like whole collective consciousness works, what motivates them. Like, all of that shit is totally laid out really flawlessly.
And this is a story that, I mean, I think we've talked about this concept before. Like, they initially introduced the Ferengi to be the main enemy to the Federation in this show when they fucked it up so badly that they had to scrap it and start all over again. Like,
right.
This is a show that had enough runway to start all over again and introduce a new alien and do it right.
Right.
That, you know, modern television shows don't get that chance. And it's like they learned all of a sudden in a season and a half how to do it right, and they just fucking did it. It's sort of a miracle.
Yeah.
I can really well think done. Of no other example of a television show being able to course correct like that.
You think about the fact that like the average budget per episode on this show is like more than $1 million.
Yeah.
They've spent like more than $35 million to get to this point.
Yeah, they're sort of pot committed.
Like
to making it right.
Yeah. And like the coolest thing about the Borg, I think, is that like they know when to use them for the rest of the series. Like it's not like Iron Man 2, where they're like, well, we liked having Iron Man in Iron Man 1, so let's have 50 Iron Men in Iron mm-hmm. Man 2. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you get little hints of them. There's like one or two Borg episodes like every 20, and
yeah,
and like it just builds on the kind of mythos of the Borgs, and it never gets overdone, I don't think.
One of the scenes that really that I wanted to talk to you about was, so Picard and Q beam back to 10 forward from the Previa.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how Guinan appears in this scene?
She's like hiding behind the bar.
Yeah, she like stands up from behind the bar. Like, was she sleeping back there? Like like George Costanza slept under his desk at Yankee Stadium. I was like, what is that about? It was such a cool reveal, and
yeah,
could have been super cheesy, but it worked. It worked in
it
context.
Somehow worked. Yeah. I don't know why it worked, but it did.
Also, I think Geordi has been ruined for me, man, because every time he interacts with a girl, I'm just not buying it. All of the scenes he had with Gomez just ring yeah. as super creepster vibe. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I think what I need is a Geordi episode to sort of get his stock back up for me, because I'm starting to not like him.
Yeah, you got to cleanse your Geordi palate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this maybe more than any episode also introduces the weird way that Geordi interacts with women. And he keeps getting, I feel like he also like typically gets these like real motivated and shapely young cadets right out of the academy that like really want to impress him, and it's like don't send these poor women into the engineering section on the Enterprise anywhere but there.
Yeah he's really ruining careers and lives. He's not a great leader at this point.
No.
I am the cutest of all. Lock faces on that vessel. I am the cutest of all.
As you were watching this very special episode, did you find any drunk Shimodas?
Drunk Shimoda.
Yeah, I mean, I just had to go with Anton Gomez, because I feel like she's kind of like going around the same like little parts of the ship as Jim Shimoda, and you know, spilling a drink is a real classic drunk guy party foul. So she's my drunk Shimoda, and we should say, Drunk Shimoda is the award we give at the end of every episode for a character who's goofing around, doing something silly, or maintaining the spirit of Jim Shimoda, our favorite character from episode 2.
Our hero.
How about yourself?
My Drunk Shimoda was Commander Riker, and it's for a very specific scene. So the Dustbuster Club beams over to the Borg Cube, and they're knocking around over there, doing some exploring. And Riker rounds the corner of the Borg nursery, and like you can hear the baby's cries from outside. He hits a button, and out slides an incubator with a little baby with little Borg stuff attached to it. Yeah. And I couldn't help but think that Riker's secondary mission was to check to see if any of the babies were his. Like what he tells Picard is, oh man, there's like a nursery over here, and they're like starting these kids young on these cybernetics. But like, we don't see it, but I'm pretty sure he opens up the rest of those incubators to see if anyone looks like him.
Yeah.
And so, like anyone who might have made a mistake after a night of drinking, I feel like Riker checking some paternity is my drunk Shimoda.
Oh, he's on a very special episode of Borg Mori.
Commander Riker, you are not the father.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, man. This show took a dark turn. Well, this episode can't be beat. I'm curious about what follows it in the series. What are we watching next time?
Looks like you're going to get what you were hoping for with a Geordi episode, because the next episode is Season 2, Episode 17, Samaritan Snare. While Picard fights for his life in surgery, Geordi is held hostage by the leaders of an alien race.
Hmm. I don't remember anything about this episode.
I think it's the one with the, like, dumb guys that don't know how to, like, fix their ship, and they, like, it winds up being sort of like a short con for, like, parts and technologies. They, like, take Geordi hostage. Hmm. I think it's that.
What's wrong with Picard's heart? Do you remember that?
All I remember is that the surgery uniform that Dr. Pulaski wears has a built-in fez.
Fantastic. I want to see that.
No veto on your part?
You won't get that from me.
Okay. I will also not veto.
All right.
We will watch that one next time.
Perfect. If you want to talk to us about this super long episode or any of the other mistakes we've made on any other episode, you can find us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm at CutForTime. Ben is at BenjaminAHR.
We're also in a Facebook group called Greatest Generation and the Maximum Fun Reddit and the Greatest Gen Reddits. Both are fun places to go and chat about the shows. Please leave us an iTunes review, 5-star or don't bother. We'd love to get a little bit of distance between ourselves and Mission Log, lest they finally engage with us in our rap battle and try and catch up. Oh, and we should, thank MaximumFun.org, our beloved podcast network. And you can listen to all kinds of fantastic shows on that network, not limited to the Beef and Dairy Network, The Flop House, One Bad Mother, Judge John Hodgman, Stop Podcasting Yourself. We got this. There's so many great shows on the network.
You might think that you have no interest in listening to Beef and Dairy Network.
You'd be wrong.
But I'm telling you.
You gotta
give Beef and Dairy Network a try.
That is a fucking singular piece of podcast artwork.
It's an achievement.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
The Beef and Dairy Network went on Maximum Fun about 3 weeks before we did. And when they went on, like, we had been sort of talking to them about the possibility. And when that show went on and I listened to it, I was like, holy shit, we are not good enough to be.
I thought the same thing. As soon as they made the network, I was like, no fucking way.
Yeah. Holy mackerel, that is a good show.
It actually, right, like, inspired me to really put a lot of effort into the production of this show. Like to be serious for a second. Like, that show is very well produced in a very hilarious way, and we could only hope to be as good as that one.
Yeah, that's something to aspire to, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and also whatever this is.
Make it so. Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
He's a Borg. Oh no! Ah! Picard's a Borg.